Welcome to Not Work Myth and Storytelling. This is the show where ancestral wisdom meets the modern imagination and our timeless connection to the land itself. Season 7, Episode 10, To Fall from the Sky, to Cross Over the Sea, Stories and Conversation with Caitlin Curtis. Caitlin Curtis is an award-winning author, poet, storyteller, and public speaker. As an enrolled citizen of the Potawatomi Nation, Caitlin writes on the intersections of spirituality and identity and how that shifts throughout our lives. Caitlin is the co-founder and director of the Aki Institute, which is dedicated to creating positive change in the world through rest, responsibility, and resistance. The work of the Aki Institute is driven by a commitment to social justice, equity, and human rights. As an interspiritual advocate, Caitlin participates in conversations on topics such as colonialism in faith communities, and she has spoken at many conferences on the importance of interfaith relationships. Caitlin leads workshops and retreats, as well as lectures and keynote presentations, ranging from panels at the Aspen Climate Conference, retreats at Iona Abbey in Scotland, and speaking at the Chautauqua Institution, and at universities, private retreat centers, and churches across the country. I'll include a list of all of her books in the show notes, but the specific titles we reference in the conversation are Native, Identity, Belonging, and Rediscovering God, and her latest, Everything is a Story, Reclaiming the Power of Stories to Heal and Shape Our Lives. You can also find Caitlin's writing over on her Substack publication, The Liminality Journal.
Well, I am so excited to welcome Caitlin to the podcast. I'm so glad that you're here. As is our way at Not Work Myth and Storytelling, we'll first ask the story to speak for itself, and then we're going to explore all the ways that it resonates and matters. So Caitlin Falcia, welcome. Would you tell us the story?
Thank you. Bonjour, Caitlin Curtis and Dejnikas Potawatomi and Dow. Hello, everyone. My name is Caitlin Curtis. I am a citizen of the Potawatomi Nation, and just really honored to be here today with you. So I'm going to weave two stories together that have been sitting with me. And one of them is a more traditional Potawatomi story that I'm sure many people have maybe heard glimpses of. And then the other one is a personal story. And these two stories have been just moving with each other just in the last few days, even for me. So really beautiful to be able to have a conversation partner to weave them with. So the first story is the story of Sky Woman. And if anyone has read Robin Wall Kimmerer's Braiding Sweetgrass, who Robin's from my tribe, and I love her, and she shares about Sky Woman in this story. Gij Kokwe is what we call her, and so there's many iterations of this story, so I'm going to share just one that I know, and we know that oral stories are shapeshifters and that they change over time, and so we just give this story the life that it has right now in this moment. And I think it is so beautiful for the time that we're in. So Sky Woman falls from Sky World. There's a hole created in Sky World by Creator. And Sky Woman is falling through this hole in the sky. She is pregnant. And as she falls, she grabs some seeds from some of the trees that she is leaving behind as she's falling to Earth, to the lands that we know, which at that point were just vast waters. And at some point, as she's falling, that fear grips her that she's falling free fall through a sky toward the earth and is sort of waiting to see what's going to happen next, which I'm sure is terrifying as a pregnant woman falling through the sky. But she knows who she is and where she's journeying to and for what reason. So she's trusting. And in that moment, the flock of geese are flying nearby, and the geese create a formation because they notice this woman falling through the sky, and they slowly swoop in to allow her to land softly on their backs, and they lower her down. And down below is Mashike, turtle, who is such an important part of who we are. We call this land Turtle Island because of Mashike. Trusted elder and friend and someone that we honor so much. And so Sky Woman is lowered onto Mashike's back, and that is how the land is created. And she has these seeds, right? And so they create all of the world that we know. And I think that it is such a beautiful partnership in so many ways. It's sort of an immigrant story. It's a story about community and care. It's a story about how we show up in those moments of panic. how we show up to each other, and how we trust our journey. So that's the story of Sky Woman. The other story I want to tell is one of my own, and it's from about a decade ago, a little over a decade. I was a young mom, still breastfeeding my youngest. So, young myself, I had my first son at 23. At 23 and 25, I had my kids. So I was young and they were young. And one day we went for a walk in the woods. We lived in Atlanta at the time, and we were walking through these woods, and I was in a journey. A moment in my journey where I was just asking so many deep questions about identity, about what it means to be a Potawatomi woman, about what it might mean to be a writer. You know, I was just moving through this heavy moment trying to understand who I am. And I'm walking on this path, and I have my youngest with me. So he's a baby, and he needs to be fed. So there's nowhere to sit down, really. So I just turn him sideways and nurse him as I walk. And in that moment, the women in my lineage come to visit me. And what's important about this story is that in 1838, there was something called the Trail of Death, which is in my people's story, it's important. In my own story, it was a forced removal of over 800 Potawatomi people from Indiana, and they were forced to march all the way to Kansas in a 2 month long trek. And then my ancestors ended up in Oklahoma. So that's where I was born. And the women who came to me in this moment of nursing my son in the middle of the woods were those women who nursed their babies on the Trail of Death, and those grandmothers who were holding that space. And it was the women. It was the women so clearly. And I stopped in my tracks and felt them in my feet. I remember feeling my feet like lead, you know? And them just reminding me, like, we did this. We walked unknown paths, and we felt it in our feet, and we nursed our babies, and we held them, and we navigated through unknown seasons, right? And moved through times where we didn't know the future. And that was a really, really pivotal moment for me. I got back in the car and grabbed a piece of paper and was like, no one talked to me. And I wrote it all down, you know, which is what I often do when something really comes up. And that it was like, I always say it was like, you know, flipping a switch on in me, that there were ways I was trying to understand what it means to be a Potawatomi woman, what it means to be a Potawatomi mother, all of these things. And these women coming to me and just saying, it's in your feet. It's in the land that you're walking. It's in who you are. And we've done it so you can do it. Was such a gift, and such a gift of the ancestors. And so I love how these two stories connect. I think there's this power in the childbirth and the nursing, and all in how all generations are connected, right? How we are ancestors in the making right now, and we have ancestors, and we have those future generations we're caring for. And it's often just so overlapped and woven, and surprises us in these moments when we're not expecting. And I think that idea also of being held in those times of distress or deep questions. So I think of that moment as Sky Woman is falling through the air, just that maybe it was a quick moment and she was wondering, what's about, you know, what's going to happen now? This is frightening. And then she was taken care of. And that season for me of asking, what's going to happen? This is frightening, and being met there. And then just this theme of women and land, because turtle is land, Mexica is land. So that land I was walking on in Atlanta is also the land of turtle, you know, is also the land that Sky Woman met when she landed on turtle's back. And so how beautiful it is that the land continues to speak to us and hold us and ground our feet, you know, when we need that grounding. And I just love how these stories are both settling in. And I think maybe it has a lot to teach all of us about who we are in this moment and how we show up.
Oh, Caitlin, I'm almost always speechless after a story, but as you were speaking, as you were just spitting out these different pieces of narrative that all weave together, like the tears were just so close that at this point the tenderness is so intense that it's that question of how we speak into and hold that which is beyond speech, and yet that was which such is the gift of the human mind and the human tongue to be able to express to each other. Thank you for this immense gift.
Thank you.
Knotwork is a listener-supported show. And if these stories and conversations mean something to you, then becoming a paid subscriber to the Mythworkers Hearth over on Substack is the most direct way to keep the podcast going. As my thank you, paid subscribers receive Tourists, a series of special episodes that go deeper into the mythical, imaginal, and physical landscapes at the heart of this work. It's the journey within the journey. As a paid subscriber, you're also invited to join our monthly hearth gatherings, live storytelling, writing, and conversation with fellow myth-minded companions. You can find the link to subscribe to the Mythworkers Hearth in the show notes or visit us at mythworkers.com.
Oh, really stands out to me is that the sense of a woman with her foot meeting the ground. You as a young mother, your own ancestors, that sense of what it must have been like for Sky Woman when first she would have set her foot back onto turtle and then presumably gently let down onto the earth herself. I remember once hearing that like the whole miracle that is bipedal walking, like our human ability to walk, is that we are constantly on the verge of disaster. Like we should topple over all the time. But the immense ability of the body to keep us up in the air, like, you know, maybe 5 feet off the ground, and also have our feet constantly touching the earth and negotiating, just to me is like that movement of it's sky and earth in constant relationship. And it just hit me at that sort of everyday miracle level of the gift of those of us who are able to walk. That's not a given by any means, but that sense of there's a gift within that. And I'm just immensely aware of that at the embodied level.
Yeah. And you just think of, you know, if you've, well, I've done a lot of Zoom meditations. Of course we gather online and we sit in our spaces and we encourage one another to feel the ground beneath us, you know, and we're in our houses or business buildings where there's multiple floors, so the ground is very firm beneath us, but it is there. And I think that the promise of that is so beautiful. There's so many times when I think maybe without us realizing it, we need contact, some sort of contact with land, to heal us on ways that are completely beyond us. You know, there's so much that is ancestrally moving through the land at all times, you know, the stories of trauma and the stories of complete healing and hope. And I think it's part of our responsibility to connect with the land however we can and allow it's all it's like yeah, because around that time a friend of mine kind of said this word to me that you know, as I'm walking, there's like roots coming out of the soles of my feet. And at the same time, whatever's in the ground is also bringing roots up to meet me. So that beautiful imagery that when we are moving across this earth in however form that is, even spiritually, there's roots that are being dug into the dirt that we need. And that the earth, Sagamakwe, Aki is the word for dirt in Potawatomi, and earth, that they're always responding back. It isn't a good try, thanks for trying, I see your roots, but I'm not going to give you anything. Even if it's not what we expect, there is always a reciprocity and the gift of that if we're willing to let ourselves create those roots and find our way home, which is so beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, in the way in which, you know, in 2026, we've turned it into touch grass, right? And in some ways, that's so glib. And yet in some ways, like, and also, it's so close to the everything of what do you truly need? A reconnection to the everything. Who can give that to us? The dirt beneath our feet. And just start there, right? And what you say, too, around the sense of that reciprocity, I know I've always imagined, too, that's like, if I'm being held by Mother Earth with every step, is it possible that I'm giving her a little bit of a back rub and that I could be doing that intentionally enough to say, it's okay that my feet are here and that my feet are welcome here And that's something that I've certainly struggled with and sat with so often as a white person in on Turtle Island, in this sense of, knowing that my ancestral stories are rooted 3,000 miles away across an ocean. It feels like it's that constant, I want to say, negotiation. And it is at some level, but then I think there's other levels, it's that sense of like set down that very legalistic human need and instead just be
Right.
with awareness, but just be.
Yeah, and I think there's like multiple layers of belonging in this because I know for me as an Indigenous teacher and healer and author, I tell people all the time that it's not like it's just the job of Native people to heal the land or to create relationship with the land and the waters around us. That is in the DNA of who we are as humans. It's just that we recognize, I always think of it like we're the youngest siblings here in all of this understanding of what it means to exist, that we entered the web of belonging last in our ways of understanding. So for us to have that humility in the ways we connect with the earth, and then it's layered with what does it mean politically? If you're on native lands, how do you honor that? What does it mean socially? We can add on all the layers of responsibility of what it means, while also holding that core identity for ourselves and allowing us to nurture this relationship with Sagamakwe, with Mother Earth. I tell people to get a blank journal and start writing love notes to Mother Earth. I joke that it's like a define the relationship letters, like because we need to. If we aren't acknowledging there is a relationship there, then we're going to miss so much about the repair that we need collectively. And so encouraging people to, begin writing these love notes. Where did the relationship get fractured, and how can we make amends? Or, what should we apologize for, and what do we love about her? There's so many things. Bring up memories that are meaningful, and then begin to care for those and tend to them, and then tend to the relationship. And I think so much healing could come if we did that on our own and then did it collectively. It would be so beautiful and reflects that powerful connection that Sky Woman had and that Turtle has with the earth. It's all in the reciprocity of those connections.
And in that practice, I feel like it's inherent to it that you both, you would end up reflecting on your own in this lifetime relationship and that times in which you've made the garden out of the native plants and the times in which you just said, screw it, I'm going to Home Depot and I'm going to buy all the stuff at the most kind of at the superficial level, but those consumerist levels, they matter, right? Like whether you plant the invasive thing, but then I would, then there'd be all the other ways that I would see this practice is taking you into the much deeper time ancestral connections that some of us think about fairly regularly, but are not necessarily part of our everyday, 21st century American routine.
And I found that there's we've created this, at least in the US, in this land, we've created in Potawatomi, we call America, not Turtle Island, not the land itself, but the institution of America created on Turtle Island. We call it Chimokmonkeak, which translates to the land of the long butchering knives. And it speaks to the violence of the institution of the United States of America that's been placed on the back of turtle, on
Yes.
Mexican. And so I think that that speaks so much to what we've inherited and the type of relationship we've inherited, and our need for ego. We have to prop ourselves up somehow. I grew up Southern Baptist, actually, so grew up in a church culture that was all about domination and how we are the most important ones. We're the ones who matter most out of everything. How can we center ourselves and center our power, and to completely turn that around and become humble and become childlike and allow ourselves to be fed by the presence of an elder tree is very, I think, intimidating for a lot of people. And it goes against so much of the culture we've created of ego and of what we can attain and consumerism and capitalism, So it is actually so radical, but at the same time, it's so It's so much coming home to ourselves if we allow ourselves to do it and to practice it. And I think that the land is always calling to us and waiting for us if we're willing.
It makes me want to go out and search out a 251-year-old tree and a 250-million-year-old mountain. Because I know you've been writing really eloquently. I've seen your like Instagram posts around this quote unquote celebration of 250 July 4ths on this. Hey, please say the Potawatomi word again for that you used for
Chamokmonkeek.
Maybe we could just talk a little bit about knowing this episode is actually coming out right around the 4th of July, like where how that's settling in for you and just what feels like must be said right now.
Yeah, thank you. I've just noticed that there is this grief that's been coming up, and it comes up every year. It comes up around the fourth. It comes up around Thanksgiving for many. Indigenous people, we have sort of these patterns that arise. And just for me and my own experience, I certainly don't speak for all Potawatomi people or all Indigenous people, but I have just noticed there's this grief that arises every now and then. And I mean, I've been doing this work for over a decade, so the stories and those experiences are all there, but sometimes I need to speak them. And so I decided, on my Substack to do this mini series, and I'm having conversations with some different friends online at different moments and sharing on Instagram. And it's just that being able to name the grief, this particular grief, Indigenous grief over America and who Turtle Island is, sort of versus who America is, and this difficult liminal space that we exist in between the two, honestly, and navigating that as Indigenous people. And I've asked, my readers and my audience to just hold it with me. You don't have to name anything alongside me, really. Just hold it with me and allow me to speak these things. And my book, Native, came out in 2020, and it was like my memoir. So it was a lot of my story, a lot of my struggles with how I grew up in American Christianity, which is highly colonial and problematic and has damaged me in so many ways, and the healing from that. So that book was so beautiful and so difficult to write. And the themes and the stories in it, being able to put those in the light and let people read them was really healing, but is also so exhausting. And so it's like when we open up the floodgates, how much is going to flood out. And I don't know that people recognize how much Indigenous people are holding all the time, if it's like collective stories or if it's even just our own experiences of things that we've gone through. And so I'm holding a lot of that. And what's so beautiful is at the same time holding this deep gratitude for. Just this morning, I wrote down the names of as many as I could think of all the people who have been there for me over my decade of work. And I filled like 4 pages, and of 4 pages with like sections. So, like three columns of stories or of people's names, three columns of people's names in like 4 pages. And of people who have along the way just said, your work's really important. What you're doing matters. I've bought extra copies of your books to give to people. Would you come speak at my event? Any way that people have just shown up and said, I want to know who you are and what you do in the world. And I want to care for your people more. And I want to care about these narratives more. And the very real embodiment of colonialism that continues today, it's not ended. And so I'm holding. And it makes me even more emotional is holding the grief and then holding such deep gratitude that I don't have to carry it alone, and that the relationship between writers and their readers is actually can be incredibly sacred. I view it as a sacred thing, and it means a lot to me and has meant so much to me over the last decade. And so that's also rising in me is we are in a really difficult place right now, as a country, And then also, I just have all of these like threads of hope and possibility and collaboration and movement, you know, forward movement that is like ancestrally bound and is thinking of future generations and is talking about social justice and, you know, how can we decolonize and how can we create different systems and how can we exist more seasonally in a cyclical way? How can we heal even that, you know? So
Yeah.
that's showing up everywhere. And so it's a really beautiful liminal space to hold. And I'm really grateful to hold it while also being able to name what hurts and to have others hold that with me.
I just want to just hold that sense of writing a list of gratitude and a na list of names, all full of love and support, because gosh, so much of our history of the written word has been lists of the dead and lists of those who have been sinned against. So I just want to just hold and honor the, like, yes, let's make lists of love and just say, I see that and feel that. And I hope this lands well. And this, because this is what I, you know, in terms of how I could hope to stand beside you, is it just happens to be that on the 4th of July celebrations, where my family is on Cape Cod, which is the Wampanoag land, we literally watch the fireworks. Essentially, we can see First Encounter Beach from where we are, which was where the Mayflower first landed. And I have carried that awareness while there in a very silent way, because generally people don't decide they want to discuss, you know, 1620 and the colonial history of, like, yes, we see Plymouth right there. That's where the power plant is, just up from there. And that's First Encounter Beach and the endless, well, for me, it's because the liminal space of the shoreline is so important to me, and the space of where the two worlds meet, knowing just elementally. But I've been carrying this awareness too, like, that's where the first Europeans put their feet down on the ground in this area. And so this year I'll carry Native with me. It's on my endless TBR pile, so it's coming with me to the Cape this summer to hopefully start a conversation on a place where people generally just want to say, do you have more sunblock, and why is there sand in my peanut butter and jelly? But maybe it is that sense of, gosh, that isn't much, but it's maybe it's something in that sense of, how do we talk about what this land always has been and was 400 years ago and still wants to be and still is, even as we continue to just consume upon it and build upon it and forget upon it.
Well, the opening line of Native is just a short sentence that says, Indigenous bodies are bodies that remember. And it's not just our Indigenous bodies, but it is the Indigenous bodies of land and bodies of water, you know? When I go to Lake Michigan, it's always Michigami is what we call her, and you know that's my ancestral lands before that removal of my people to Kansas and Oklahoma. And every time I go there, I am so utterly overwhelmed because I know that those waters carry all the stories, all of them, and they don't forget any of them, and they are angry about some of them, and they are overjoyed about some of them, and they're saddened by some of them, but they don't forget. And it's so beautiful because I can come and feel those, but I can also surrender them back to the water. And it is so powerful what water carries. You can think of all of the horrors that have happened on water, all those water journeys throughout our history as a nation that have ended in terror and dehumanization and all of that. And those waters carry those stories and certainly carry the stories of my people. And so remembering how sacred water is, that it can hold and remember, it just means that those waters can hold and tend to us too, in all of the ways. If we are wanting to grieve and name these stories like you are, let the water hold that with you and let the land hold it, you know? I think that we are, as we're on this journey of healing collectively together, we can do that with the elements, with the lands, with the waters, with the rocks and the trees because they all have stories. They've been holding them. They're like waiting for us. Like, are you ready? Do you want to ask me anything yet? You know? And it's so beautiful. Like, I met a tree earlier this week here near where I live, and she's a grandmother tree, and she is the most straightforward, like, tell you like it is tree I've ever met in my life. And she's just waiting for me to come and ask her all my billions of questions and then tell me to just be quiet and listen. And it's such a gift, you know, we don't know what we're missing until we have those relationships. And I just invite people to learn to listen and to engage in those stories. That work is so much deeper than we realize it is. Just that work alone, you know, of healing ourselves. And it's childhood wounds, it's intergenerational wounds for each of us. You know, there's a lot carried in that. And I am inviting us into that because we need it. We need it because we can't show up for each other well if we're not healing that line of things inside of ourselves. You know, it is all connected.
You know, it feels like we constantly confuse what we're meant to do on our own, what we possibly couldn't possibly ask for help for. Like, it's this bizarre level of, I guess we know it's the toxic individualism of today, but it's also just like this human hubris that we seem to have developed over the centuries. I don't think it's necessarily part of our internal processing system. Our ancestors knew this, and then I don't know, we invented one too many things and started living just far enough away that, oh, I couldn't actually ask that of a tree. I just need to go get my right.
And I think it's why so many people are being drawn to earth-based practices, land-based memory. Like it, and from any culture, from all over the world, there are people who are trying to find their way. They're really like searching and seeking. And I think that that is speaking to the time that we're living through, that some of us are asking some deep questions about how we've been showing up in the world. And what we've been doing and how we could do it differently and embody time and place differently and care differently and kinship differently. And the story of Sky Woman and my own experiences constantly point me back to that, but I think they could point so many of us back to that, all these ancient stories, you know.
And that constant marriage of sky and earth. So before you and I had started recording, we were talking about the other sort of, there is an Irish connection that we do share here as well. I'd love to explore that a bit more and your own recent experiences of spending time, especially in the north, and also the Sbaireavon. And do you want to talk a little bit about her? I don't think she's ever been introduced on the podcast, and she's long overdue to be part of the Knotwork story.
Yeah, well, this was just so exciting for me because I've been trying to understand and find these beautiful connections between Anishinaabe stories and spirituality and our language, and then Celtic identity, spirituality, and Irish language. And because that's also a part of my ancestry as well, and trying to understand some of that has been so beautiful in the overlap. And so there's someone I follow on Instagram, and he does a lot of Irish language. And one day he was saying, let me tell you about like the most beautiful woman in Irish, you know, history and who she is. And so he said Sbaireavon, and he talked about how she is Sky Woman. And so I went and looked it up immediately, and then I commented, and you know, my comment on that video has so many likes because people were so excited to understand this too. And Gishko Kwe is sky or day woman. And so it's carrying the same beautiful power of origin story and of land and of, like you said, the connection between sky and earth and how we exist here. So to learn about Sbaireavon and how she is that sort of nurturer and she's involved in the spirit and embodiment of poetry, and she's showing up, you know, to teach us who we are and to care for Ireland, I think is so beautiful. And another one of those gorgeous connections that we have between cultures, if we're willing to look and search and go crazy studying language. But it's so beautiful when you find those connections because we look at each other and remember, oh, This is what it means to be human. This is what it means to decolonize, even. This is what it means to invest in these stories and let them live and ask if we can be better humans right now. You know, that's it, just leads us to all of those questions, which I think is so exciting.
Yeah, it's confirmation that the work that we're doing here isn't just, keeping busy. It's instead this sense of, no, we're doing this deeper weaving of all these unseen pieces. And I hadn't thought of the Sparavon in ages. So you mentioned her just before, and I didn't have a chance to go back. But as far as I remember, and I will correct this for the record if necessary, but she's from the Aisling tradition of poetry. And so much of that was written in resistance to colonization. Like these were the last of the Gaelic poets dealing with the presence of the English. And that vision of the Sparavon was that she was essentially part of the reclaiming of the tradition, but in some ways too, the sense of salvation and the dream of like, because the Aisling is the vision poem, right? So that's this sense of the embodiment of Ireland herself. She could, I guess, in a way, she could rise again, and come to us. And there's another way to be lifted up from maybe perhaps from under the boot of the colonizer who had landed. And
That's beautiful.
I hope I'm right. I'm channeling this is like this is definitely 25-year-old knowledge from a class. I Phil O'Leary, if you're listening, please tell me I got it right. I'm gonna go up. I think I literally have my course pack there from my senior seminar to check my notes.
Good. Well, no matter what, though, those stories of resistance and how they are woven matter so much today. I mean, they are. And they're woven throughout all of these different stories, from Celtic culture and histories and indigenous culture and histories to Turtle Island. It's so beautiful how, and through poetry and through song and through oral stories, it's so beautiful how we've continued to carry those for so long. They obviously mean something to us.
And you've been called over to Ireland relatively recently, that you sort of kind of got the song to go across the oceans. What brought you there, and what keeps drawing you back, and how is it influencing your work right now?
I went for the first time in 2024 to lead a retreat with a dear friend of mine in Northern Ireland. So I've gone back to Northern Ireland a few times and have some really dear friends there. And the first time I went, I even for me, I when I go places, I recognize that I'm a guest on those lands. And so I arrive with a lot of humility and a lot of asking, may I approach, thank you for being who you are. I'm going to lay down my medicine. We use tobacco in our culture, so when you pray somewhere, you can lay tobacco, but I know that that's not native to that place. So I share, I'm coming with this tobacco, and I just want to give it to you and thank you, So there's those moments, and it was just really beautiful to be welcomed by the lands and the waters and the people, and to now have these beautiful connections that are so important to me. And through parts of my own Celtic ancestry, to have my ancestors sort of interact with my Potawatomi ancestors and speak to me in really amazing ways that are bridging so much care and healing, and then leaning into language, because I am a writer and I love language and etymologies and how we weave those into our stories. I'm a poet, and my most recent book is called Everything is a Story. So how could it not be, and so I think that beautiful work of weaving and asking more deeply how we do this work well is just so much a part of me and has been such a gift. And we have this phrase in Potawatomi, ajogami, which means across the sea, ajogami. And so when I fly from Philly, to Dublin, it's just an overnight flight, and I get there and ajogami, and you're there, and then you come home, and it's such a beautiful thing to have that access, and I'm just so deeply grateful. And I'm excited to share, what I learn in hopes that it brings healing for a lot of us in the future.
At the risk of this sounding silly, I think it actually could be rather profound, is that sense of we think about flight and this sense of, being able to cross the sea overnight. Like, isn't that being the sky woman in those moments? And that's this modern gift we have, which, oh my goodness, we get to travel and weave our worlds together. And fossil fuels and jet engines and the destructive nature that comes with it, and the contrast, as you were naming before, of what the oceans remember in all of those passages across the sea that would have taken months. And these are one of these things that I feel like sometimes I just lay all these things down in a blanket and I'm like, I don't know what to do with all of these multicolored paradoxical stones and feathers
Right.
and bits of rabbit bone. But my goodness, that's a wild set of realities and sense memories and half memories and ancestral knowing that we are sky and we are ocean and we live in the both.
Yeah.
And whoa.
Yeah, this what you're sharing about reminds me of this poem that I wrote about Sky Woman. So I want to read it because I actually wrote it when I was standing in the parking lot at our climbing gym. So we rock climb as a family, and sometimes, oftentimes, poetry just shows up. For me, it's a very, my poetry is not, it's not something that I, sit with and diagram out and work out a whole lot. It's like, I get just kind of like hit in the face with a poem and I better write it down or it's gone forever. And so there's so many poems in my notes app. And so I wrote this one night. I had come out of the climbing gym and there were some geese in the sky. And I thought of Sky Woman, I thought of geese, and it was dark. So that idea of flying overnight, Ajagami across the sea. So let me read this to us.
Please.
It is dark in this parking lot. But above me, the geese are flying, shouting their way to a new horizon. And I imagine them on that day so long ago when they caught Sky Woman on their wings, as they took in a stranger from a foreign land and promised to keep her safe. Even then, they were scanning every landscape for a soft place to shelter her, making sure Turtle was ready to receive their precious cargo. This time whispering so they wouldn't wake her pregnant body on the steady, sacred descent home. How I wish for a moment that I was Sky Woman, so that I could have known their kindness that day, flown steadily down on their wings of silk. But if I had, I wouldn't know it here and now, this perfect moment of kinship, of geese finding their way in a loud and dark world towards some waiting, illuminated stillness.
Oh, Caitlin, thank you for taking us into your illuminated stillness. Oh, it has been such a treat to have you with us today and to cover such territory and to get still and go deep and soar high and dive through. As we get closer to saying farewell, is there anything, any sort of stones you want to make sure we don't leave unturned? Anything you want to bring to our conversation?
I think that I would encourage people right now to lean into the relationships that you have. Like I shared earlier about this list, it all came up because I have a folder in my email that's called Solidarity, and it's the folder where just the beautiful things go. And there's just so much happening in the world, but yet I've made so many beautiful connections with people on social media and, in the places where we say it can't be done, or in the spaces where we talk about how it won't work or it won't happen. And I just want to remind us that in the time we're living in, that we need each other to dream of and to create the world that is coming and to prepare for future generations. We need each other, and we need each other in the grief, like some of this grief I'm holding right now, and we need each other in the deep work of dreaming and joyous celebration of what could be. And I just want to remind us of that because I'm doing just a lot of like Zoom coffee dates with people because all of those are like building blocks for what the future might be, all of those. And I hope that we feel it that way. And it certainly, I hope, could be in person for people, but I also hope that you utilize things like Zoom because you can create sacred space anywhere. And I think that I just want to remind us of what is possible and that we don't take for granted these interactions and these friendships and the relationships we're building across time and space because they're like investments, they're building blocks into what we want to create down the road. And I hope that that reminds us we're not alone, and helps us invest deeper into kinship in all of its forms.
Beautiful. Thank you for just, yes, that blessing on the way we spend so many of our days. Oh gosh, I was just on the computer. It's just a virtual connection. That is as real as the grass we all are going to go touch after we have this, listen to this conversation and have this conversation. Oh, well, Caitlin, thank you so much. Meal of Weakest. Thank you for bringing us your stories and your insights and your pain and also your hope. Just you fill me so completely with your poetry and your community building. And everybody, Everything is a Story is a gorgeous, gorgeous book that I highly recommend. As well as how many other, in addition to Native, you have at least how many other books do you have out there? Huge.
I have three children's books, and the fourth one comes out this fall, which is so
Excellent.
fun. They'll finally all be
Yeah.
out as a pair. And then I have, four adult nonfiction as well. I'm looking at them on my shelf. I always look at them like I don't remember, but visual person, so I'm like counting how many books did I write. But yeah, I have four adult nonfiction and then four children's books. So yeah.
Oh, yeah, we'll link to those in the show notes. But thank you so much for being here with us today, and I hope we can keep journeying together.
Shimiguach, thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Knot Work, Myth, and Storytelling. Please subscribe and review the show on your favorite podcast platform, and do share this episode with other lovers of mythology and story. Want more knot work in your life? Please consider becoming a paid subscriber to my newsletter, The Mythworker's Hearth, over on Substack. As a paid subscriber, you'll have access to the special new podcast series called Touras, which takes you even deeper into mythology, landscape, and the creative journey. And yes, that's a new name. You may know my newsletter as Myth is Medicine. It's now The Mythworker's Hearth. Creating this show is a labor of love, and your support will help me continue to craft and share stories throughout this season and beyond. You can find out more about my writing, my book, The Sovereignty Knot, A Woman's Way to Freedom, Power, Love, and Magic, our online writing communities, including the Author's Knot, as well as how to work with me as a writing coach over at my website, marisagowdy.com. Music on the show is by Beth Sweeney and Billy Hardy, a Celtic fiddle and multi-instrumental duo based on Cape Cod, Massachusetts. Find out about their music and shows at billyandbeth.com. My own work is inspired and sourced through a connection to my Irish ancestors. Gratefully, I live, write, work, and record this podcast on the ancestral lands of the Lenape, whose name means original people.